Tunja Bihari. Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari. Kishore Nandana Braja Jana Randana Kishore Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Jaya Gopi Jana Vallabha Giri Varadhari Yashore Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yashore Nandana Braja Jana Randana Yamuna Tira Vanachari Yamuna Tira Vanachari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayo Radha Madhava Kunja Bihari Jayam Vishnupad Paramahansa Parivraj Kacharya Sutoktar Sutrishi Samar Sarangai Saisi Bhakti Vedanta Swami Prabhupada Ki Jai Tantara Charimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai Nitai Go Premanande Hari Hari Go Samadvaita Bhakta Vrinda Ki Jai All Grace to the Assembled Devotees All Grace to the Assembled Devotees All Grace to the Assembled Devotees All Grace to Sri Sri Guru Gauranga Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya When there are a few people, I'm always reminded of Prabhupada, how he would, sometimes you listen to some Prabhupada lecture and you think he's talking to an auditorium full of people, then at the end you hear like three devotees. I was listening to a lecture, and it was in Los Angeles, 1968, and Prabhupada was speaking in his normal fired up way. Then at the end he said, "So we are very happy that someone has let us have this garage to have this program." He was giving his Bhagavatam class, and some of the, you know, devotees were living in a garage for a while in Los Angeles. So that's where Prabhupada was preaching. Could have been preaching anywhere, but his garages aren't usually very big. So he spoke with whatever audience he had. So today we're reading Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 2, Chapter 2, The Lord in the Heart, texts 24, 25, and 26. We're going into unknown worlds here, things we're not used to hearing about. So the first verse, text 24, word meanings, Vaishvaranam, the controlling deity of fire, Yati goes, Vihayasa, by the path in the sky, the Milky Way, Gataha, by passing over, Sushumnaya, by the Sushumna, Brahma, Brahmaloka, Potena, on the way to, Shochi Sha, illuminating, Vidhuta, being washed off, Koka, dirt, Atta, thereafter, Hare, of Lord Hari, Uda, stopped, upwards, Prayati, does reach, Chakram, circle, Nirpa, O King, Shaishumaram, named Shishumar. Vaisvaranam yati vihayasa gata. Sushumnaya brahma potena shuchisha. Viduta kalpota harirudastat. Prayati chakram nripashay shumaram. Vaishvaranam yati vihaya sagata. Sushumnaya brahma patena shuchisha. Viduta kalkota harerudasta. Prayati chakram nirpashay shumaram. Vaisvaranam yati vihaya sagata. Sushumnaya brahma patena shuchisha. Viduta kalkota harerudastat. Prayati chakram nripashay shumaram.
Vaishvanaram yati vihaya
Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport. Translation, O King. When such a mystic passes over the Milky Way by the illuminating Sushumna to reach the highest planet, Brahmaloka, he goes first to Vaishvanara, the planet of the deity of fire, wherein he becomes completely cleansed of all contaminations. And thereafter he still goes higher, to the circle of Shishumar, to relate with Lord Hari, the personality of Godhead. Purport. The polar star of the universe and the circle thereof is called the Shishumar circle, Shishumar chakra. And therein the local residential planet of the personality of Godhead, Kriyodakshayi Vishnu, is situated. Before reaching there, the mystic passes over the Milky Way to reach Brahmaloka, and while going there, he first reaches Vaishvanara Loka, where the demigod controls fire. On Vaishvanara Loka, the yogi becomes completely cleansed of all dirty sins acquired while in contact with the material world. The Milky Way in the sky is indicated herein as the way leading to Brahmaloka, the highest planet of the universe. Text 25. Tadvishvanabhintvativarchavishnor aniyasa virajanatmanarka namaskritam brahmavidam upaiti kapayisho yadvibhutaramante. This Shishumar is the pivot for the turning of the complete universe, and it is called the navel of Vishnu, Garbhodakshayi Vishnu. The yogi alone goes beyond this circle of Shishumar and attains the planet, Maharloka, where purified saints like Bhrigu enjoy a duration of life of 4,300,000,000 solar years. This planet is worshipable even for the saints who are transcendentally situated. 26. Ato anantasya mukanalena dandayamanam saniriksha vishvam niryati shidheshvara yushtatishnam yadvai paradhyam taru paramestyam. At the time of the final devastation of the complete universe, the end of the duration of Brahma's life, a flame of fire emanates from the mouth of Ananta, from the bottom of the universe. The yogi sees all the planets of the universe burning to ashes, and thus he leaves for Satyaloka by airplanes used by the great purified souls. The duration of life in Satyayuga is calculated to be 15,480,000,000 years. Report. It is indicated herein that the residents of Maharloka, where the purified living entities or demigods possess a duration of life calculated to be 4,300,000,000 solar years, have airships by which they reach Satyaloka, the topmost planet of the universe. In other words, the Srimad Bhagavatam gives us many clues about other planets far, far away from us which modern planes and spacecraft cannot reach, even by imaginary speeds. The statements of Srimad Bhagavatam are accepted by great acharyas like Sridhar Swami, Ramanuja Acharya, and Vallabha Acharya. Lord Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu specifically accepts Srimad Bhagavatam as the spotless Vedic authority, and as such, no sane man can ignore the statements of Srimad Bhagavatam when it is spoken by the self-realized soul Srila Shukadeva Goswami, who follows in the footsteps of his great father, Srila Vyasadeva, the compiler of all Vedic literatures. In the creation of the Lord, there are many wonderful things we can see with our own eyes every day and night, but we are unable to reach them equipped by modern materialistic science. We should not, therefore, depend on the fragmentary authority of materialistic science for knowing things beyond the range of scientific purview. For a common man, both modern science and Vedic wisdom are simply to be accepted, because none of the statements of either modern science or of Vedic literature can be verified by him. The alternative for a common man is to believe either of them or both of them. The Vedic way of understanding, however, is more authentic, because it has been accepted by the acharyas, who are not only faithful and learned men, but are also liberated souls, without any of the flaws of conditioned souls. The modern scientists, however, are conditioned souls, liable to so many errors and mistakes. Therefore, the safe side is to accept the authentic version of Vedic literatures, like Srimad Bhagavatam, which is accepted unanimously by the great acharyas. Om Jnanati Mirantasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurun Militamena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. Shukadeva Goswami is telling us about the path of the yogis. This is what you have to do if you want to go back to Godhead, the slow way, the scenic route. You get to see all these amazing things in the universe. It's by your own power, really. Of course, it's ordained, it's sanctioned by Krishna, but we can't even imagine how does somebody really do these things? There was earlier was talked about how first you have to raise the soul on the life air is within the body. So first you have to go through that process, which is a rigorous process. It's not an easy thing to do. It's just done by meditation somehow. I don't know if these things are written in detail somewhere in the scriptures. I assume they are, different scriptures. And of course, there's a parampara that people learn how to do these things. So first you have to get comfortably situated and gradually raise the Atma up to the top of the head. Step by step, there are different levels you have to attain. Each one, I'm sure, is difficult to get to the next level. It's more and more subtle. All of this is about more subtlety and more enjoyment too, actually, higher happiness. So as you're going up and up, then you get to the top of the skull, of course, then you leave from there, then you can go anywhere. Prabhupada says in one place, for the accomplished yogi, it's no harder than it is for us to go to the grocery store, for them to go to another planet. We just decide, today I'm gonna go here and there. There are different places where we hear about how the yogis would go into the water in one place and come up in another place, and their hair would still be wet, which is always interesting to me because it seems like some mystic thing that somehow they still get wet when they come up. But it's easy. They were able to do it. So here we hear this person, this yogi, is progressing step by step and has passed beyond Swargaloka. This path that he is on, Brahmavartma, it's the path to Brahmaloka. That's where he's trying to go. At least that's his destination for now. He wants to go to Brahmaloka. Because the sages who attain, or the yogis who attain Brahmaloka, when Brahma dies and goes back to Godhead, I don't know if that always happens or generally happens, but at least sometimes it happens, that Lord Brahma, when at the end of his day, then he goes, not his day, but his life, then he goes back to Godhead. So the yogis, they work their way up to Brahmaloka, and then when Brahma dies, then they go along with him to into the spiritual world. So this is the path that this yogi is on. He's working his way up. He's gone beyond Swargaloka, seen all the heavenly pleasures there. We know in the Vedic literature, there's so much enticement to go to the heavenly planets. In fact, a lot of people, they think that's it, go to heaven. Even the demigods, they're called Amara. They never die. Because from our perspective, imagine, I think, you know, we think about people who live 100 years and you think, boy, that's really a long time. Must get pretty bored. Especially you hit 80 and you still have another 20 years after that. And so imagine living for millions and millions of years. So when from our perspective, to see the demigods, they live for such a long time, then they're given that name. They're called Amara. They're called deathless because they live for so long. But their lifetimes are short compared to, you know, on these higher planets, which we're hearing about here. Trillions of years of our earth years. So Swargaloka, which has a very high level of refined sense enjoyment, actually. Things are really nice there on the heavenly planets. We know when the demigods get kicked out, they really don't like it. They want to get back there. They want to keep enjoying. We hear about Indra, how he's enjoying so much. Like the one time when he offended Brihaspati by not acknowledging him when he arrived there in the assembly. So he had a big party going on. He had the Gandharvas there and the Vidyadharas and the Charanas and the Apsaras were dancing, and it was really that's what he does. He parties a lot, Indra. So he was so much into it that he didn't even acknowledge when his guru arrived. Of course, that didn't turn out very well for him. But that's what goes on there. In fact, people, they work very hard for it. Traditionally, of course, the karma kandis, they work very hard to get there, to get to the heavenly planets, just to Swargaloka. They don't even think beyond that. So we're hearing how the yogi is going beyond. He's going up to Maharloka first, following this path. So Maharloka is the next one up after Swargaloka. So when you get there, you're out of the realm of fruitive activities, really. Your karma doesn't really bring you there. You have to be a yogi, a real yogi. You have to have really refined consciousness to get to Maharloka. And actually here in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, Gopakumara, of course, he goes everywhere. So when what happens, you know, if you're familiar with the story, when he first gets to some higher place, he thinks, well, this is it. Like he's on Swargaloka, and of course he wants to see the Lord. He wants to see how the Lord is worshipped, how God is worshipped. So when he gets to Swargaloka, he sees that Indra and his associates, they're worshipping Vamanadeva directly. Vamanadeva is Indra's brother. So Gopakumara thinks, well, what can be greater than this? God is his brother. But then what happens is after, well, this always happens, of course, it's his destiny, because he's a cowherd boy. He's meant to go back to Krishna. So in every place, when he first gets there, he thinks, well, this is it. I've made it. But after a little while, he starts itching to go again. He gets the wanderlust. So what happens is, what generally happens is someone visits from a higher planet, or he hears about some higher place. So someone visits, I think it's Brihaspati, visits, or sometimes what happens too is the sages, they come to Earth. So on their way down, they sort of, they decompress, they come down step by step, they don't get the bends. when they're coming down to Earth, they come down slowly, or when they go up, they take the steps to get there, go through different planets. So Gopakumara hears something about the other place, and also what happens is, this happens often, is that personality, while everyone is such a great soul on the planet where Gopakumara is at the moment, then somebody else comes and everybody starts worshipping that person. And he thinks, well, who is this? I thought everyone was great here and this was the highest. Why are they worshipping him like this? Then somebody tells him about it. So he hears about Maharloka and what it's like there. And he chants his mantra that's given to him by his Ishtadeva. And whatever he wants, if he chants his mantra with full concentration, then he just goes to the next place. So he goes to Maharloka. So there are different descriptions of these things. I found some, they weren't always saying the same thing. But there are different descriptions of these places and who's there. This is one that's from, this is from Jiva Goswami. He talks about Maharloka. There's Maharloka, then Janaloka, then Tapaloka, then Satyaloka. Satyaloka is Brahmaloka, Lord Brahma's planet. So we have the three, beginning from Earth, of course, you have Bhu, Bhuvar, Swa, up to the heavenly planets. Then you have Maharloka, Janaloka, Tapaloka, and Satyaloka, or Brahmaloka. So this is what Jiva Goswami says. This is in one of the purports in the 11th canto. Srila Jiva Goswami explains that the word tapasa in this verse refers to austerities performed by brahmacharis and vanaprastas. A brahmachari who practices celibacy perfectly in some particular stage of his life achieves maharloka. And one who perfectly practices lifelong celibacy achieves janaloka. By perfect execution of vanaprastha, one may achieve tapoloka, and one in the renounced order of life goes to satyaloka. So this is one description, but in other places we get kind of different ones. For example, we generally hear, and I think this comes out in Brihad Bhagavatamrita, that the Prajapatis are on Maharloka. And there everyone is performing sacrifice. That's what happens on Maharloka. Everyone is just engaged in performing sacrifice. Now, of course, Gopakumar, he's already somewhat familiar with sacrifice. In fact, in the very beginning of his journey, he saw people performing sacrifices, and he was inspired by the opulence of it, and he wanted to learn more. So in Maharloka, that's what people do. Sometimes they have assemblies, but most of the time they're just engaging in sacrifice. And when he's there, there's a big sacrifice going on, and he's seeing that they're offering oblations into the fire. The Lord is actually coming out of the fire personally, and he's accepting the offerings. And he's also reciprocating by giving the prasad himself. So he accepts, just like we offer to the deity, but we usually don't experience, at least I haven't yet, that Krishna comes and takes it off the plate and comes off the altar and gives it to me. But this happens there. The sacrificial fire, this is how they're worshiping the Lord. The Lord is personally present there. So he's experiencing this reciprocation with the Lord coming out of the fire and reciprocating with him. And it doesn't only happen in big assemblies, but it's going on in everybody's home. So this is kind of nice. So everyone stays home most of the time, and that's what they do. They engage in this reciprocation with the Lord. So then there, he's there for some time. But then a great sage arrives from some higher place, and that turns out to be he's also worshipped greatly, and he's accompanied by other sages, and this is Bhrigu, along with other rishis. So Bhrigu, this is one thing that gets a little complicated, because we hear about the Prajapatis and we have to hear about the rishis, the seven rishis. So he's one of the rishis, but we also hear that there are nine rishis. We know the seven, I'll mention this because this is part of what we're hearing about here, this place, this Shishumar Chakra, that is below Maharloka, between Satyaloka and Maharloka. And that's where Dhruva Maharaj's planet is, and we heard that Lord Vishnu is situated there also. So this Shishumar Shishumar means a dolphin. So like we have different constellations, we see the stars in a certain way. What we're seeing really is they're projected onto a plane, because we know it's not that they're all in the same plane. Some are millions or billions of miles apart in the third dimension, but we see them projected on a plane, and they create certain pictures. So that even, I've often thought, well, so what? What difference does it make? They're not really in that shape. But from our perspective, there are. And even from the Vedic literature and Vedic perspective and astrology, and astronomy, it's considered to have some significance. And we have the houses, of course, the houses of astrology. They're there. I was trying to understand this more because I've never really studied this. I was reading and I came across something by Sariputta Prabhu where he talks about how there are all coordinates out in the sky, just like we have longitude and latitude on the earth. So if you project those out up against the sky, that everything in the sky also has its kind of longitude and latitude. So you can locate things that way. Then the whole thing turns. So we know that the whole thing turns. Actually, it turns every night. They probably mentioned it here about the Big Dipper. We call it the Big Dipper. It's actually Ursa Major. Ursa means a bear. So it's the Big Dipper. So the Big Dipper, that's part of one of this constellation, this Shishumara, or at least it's in the deck, because that's where the seven rishis are, the Saptarishi. Each one of those seven points represents their abode. Now, where they actually live on those stars, or I heard Gopi Puranadhanapuru explain it one time, and he says these are sort of like indicators, because they live in a subtle world. We're really not seeing where they are, because we're seeing actually material planets, fiery planets. But the atmosphere that they live in is actually more subtle. The higher you go, the more subtle it gets. So anyway, generally speaking, we talk about these as the abodes of the seven rishis. So this Big Dipper, as we call it, it's visible every night, as long as the sky is clear. And it circles around the earth. Basically rises pretty much in the same place every night, and then throughout the night and the following day, then it comes back to the same point the next night. So in 24 hours, it circles, or we circle it, however you want it, the perspective you're on. But what's interesting about it, I learned, is looking at the sky early in the morning, I sometimes get interested in what's going on up there exactly. So not only does it go around the earth once, in a year, it makes another circle, because every night it goes a little bit farther. It doesn't come back to the exact same point, it goes a little bit farther on a different circle. So in 1 year, it makes another big circle all the way around. So that has some kind of astronomical significance. I don't know what it means exactly, but I thought it was interesting. Now, the two ends of the dipper, you go down the handle, and then you have these other, you know, you have the three stars, and you have the stars of the dipper itself, the can. So the two at the end, if you line those up, that the next bright star that they point to is the North Star. That's how you can find the North Star if you're ever interested. When I was living at BTG, I used to walk the part of the road that goes by the BI and where Nanda lives, that road there. Practically every morning coming back from Mangalarti, I would see the Big Dipper there, and I look up and there's the North Star. Because that road goes due north. So, of course, we don't look at the sky very much. Ancient civilizations, people really looking into the stars, and of course they could see them. These days we have light pollution. People have to go, you know, some far place out in the desert or something if they really want to see the stars, some mountain out in the desert if they really want to see the stars. And then you can really see them. Just like here, Prabhupada's talking about the Milky Way. So you can actually see it. It's a dense trail of stars, but you're not going to. I remember seeing it once really clearly. I went to see the Grand Canyon, and that area, there's not really much out there, so the sky was really black and clear, and you could see it's almost like it looks like a cloud actually, but we tend not to see it because there's so much light pollution and, you know, clouds or whatever. So this Milky Way, it's considered to be. This is the road to Brahmaloka. There's another in this article I was reading by Sataputta Prabhu. He was explaining how, you know, where this goes, and he had it mapped out actually. There's a graph where he was showing where the yogis go to these different places, because they're mentioned different stars that they go to. So here's a little something about this. I just wanted, this is from a chapter summary from the fifth canto that deals with this. It says, let's see, Dhruvaloka, the abode of Lord Vishnu within this universe, is situated 1,300,000 yojanas from the seven stars. In the planetary system of Dhruvaloka are the planets of the fire god, Indra, Prajapati, Kasyapa, and Dharma. So somehow, so this, Prabhupada talks about it as the orbit of the pole star. So when I read this, I thought, well, wait a minute. Orbit, usually an orbit is when something, like at the orbit of the Earth around the Sun, that's its orbit, it's a circle. But the pole star doesn't move, so how can it be its orbit? So it means the orbit around it, where the other things move around the pole star. That's probably refers to that as the orbit. Well, the verse actually does too. The Shishumar Chakra. So these people live there. It says, the fire god Indra, Prajapati, Kasyapa, Dharva, all of whom are very respectful to the great devotee Dhruva, who lives on the pole star. Like bulls yoked to a central pivot, all the planetary systems revolve around Dhruvaloka, impelled by eternal time. Those who worship the Bharat Purusha, the universal form of the Lord, conceive of this entire rotating system of planets as an animal known as Shishumar. This imaginary Shishumar is another form of the Lord. The head of the Shishumar form is downward, and its body appears like that of a coiled snake, although Shishumar means dolphin. On the end of its tail is Dhruvaloka. On the body of the tail are Prajapati, Agni, Indra, and Dharma, and on the root of the tail are Dhata and Vidhata. So then there's a description of these different planets, how they make up different parts of this. So the idea is, we've been hearing about meditation on the Virat Rupa, the Virat Purusha. But this is another way of doing that. Instead of thinking of the different aspects of the universe and thinking that these are gods, parts of God's body, you can also meditate on this particular aspect of the universe that everything is revolving around. This, you meditate on this dolphin as a form of the Lord actually represented up in the sky. It's basically the same idea. Yeah, this here's another. This is in that chapter 23 of the fifth canto. Transcendentalists such as yogis whose minds cannot accommodate the form of the Lord prefer to visualize something very great, such as the Virat Purusha. Therefore, some yogis contemplate this imaginary Shishumar to be swimming in the sky, the way a dolphin swims in water. They meditate upon it as the Virat Rupa, the gigantic form of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So this is a kind of imagination which is, it's interesting because, you know, there are people who study ancient cultures, and many of them, they're called mythologists. They see everything as myth, and they see kind of universal myths. And one of their arguments they tend to fall back on is how people create these myths by looking up at the sky. They see these forms, and they say, well, that's where this came from. Just like the Milky Way. Actually, the Milky Way is also called the Akash Ganga, which is the Ganges that flows in the sky. It's considered to be the Ganga, the Milky Way. That's one perspective on it. So these mythologists, they say all these ancient cultures with their beliefs, these have all come from them looking up at the sky and inventing these things, because they had to make sense of the world, so they just came up with these crazy ideas. So they say that's where the Hindus got their churning of the milk ocean. There's, I don't know how it all fits together, but that's the milk ocean, the Milky Way, or he's part of the milk ocean. I assume they see some other constellations and say, you know, he's the Asuras on one side and the Asuras on the other side, and they're churning this milk ocean. That's where this comes from. So this ties into what Prabhupada spoke about in the purport today, about how you have to accept the Shastra. You have to accept the Shastra as it is. And of course you have to accept it from the self-realized souls. From this we can say, people always say, well, who knows? Nobody's ever been there. Actually, that's not true. We're hearing about it today. There are yogis who have been there. There are yogis who go there. They go there regularly. If you can hear from such persons, you can learn these things. Prabhupada, there's one interest, maybe more than one place, where Prabhupada's talking about some yogi doing something, and he says, I have seen, I don't know what he saw exactly, but he was witness to a yogi doing, and of course he heard that story about Prapti City, where some sadhu came to his home and talked about his guru, who had this Prapti City where he brought a branch from a pomegranate tree from Kabul back to Calcutta or wherever it was, reaching through the Akash or however it's done. So they are people who do lots of things that people today don't know anything about and think are impossible and just don't believe. But these things are recorded in the Shastra. Ultimately, of course, they're coming from God, they're revelation. How can you deny it in theory? Prabhupada's talking about the scientists here. He said we have to just accept them, because what can we do? There's so many things. Actually, I was reading recently. I thought it was quite interesting. Even we had this picture of the cell, and you can go online and get graphic pictures of it, and the mitochondria, and the ribosome, whatever, the rhizomes, and all these things. These things are all theoretical. Most of these things are actually theoretical, because you can't actually see them. They're just too small. And also, you can't see a lot of times in living things. A lot of the theories that come, they come about by experiments that are done on dead things, because you have to kill them first, and then you can then you can look at them, because you can't look at them when they're actually alive. So a lot of times the foundations for the theories they come up with are just made up, really. They're theories. That's what they are. They're theories, and they're not proven. So we, as Prabhupada says, we can't verify them. We don't have the equipment to do the kinds of experiments that they're doing, even if they're seemingly bona fide experiments. We can't do them. So either we accept them or we don't accept them. So of course, our position is to accept the liberated souls, to accept them. This is actually a good argument, because just like sometimes we say, well, who are you going to believe, this guy or that guy? You know? We're going to believe the person of good character. You may know two different people, and some person is a complete reprobate, and the other person is, you know, a saintly person. Which one are you going to believe? If you have to, you know, take, whose word are you going to take? So we'll take the word of the six Goswamis. Nana Shastra Vichara Naika Nipano Sadharma Samstapako. The Goswamis went through the scriptures scrutinizingly, as Prabhupada would say, studying the Vedic scriptures. And they proved, this is their source of evidence, they proved the teachings of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu by quoting from the Vedic scriptures. And that was their authority, and how great they were. We hear about Jiva Goswami, what a genius he was. Of course, we see evidence of it by reading his books. He had studied all the darshans, the shad darshans. He knew all the philosophies. And if you know all the darshans of India, then you know them all, because the other ones are just sad imitations. If you study Jiva Goswami like Bhagavat Sundarbha, he brings up all these Mayavad arguments, and you think, these Mayavadis today, they don't know any of these things. They couldn't even express these arguments that Jiva Goswami knows. And they're the Purva Paksha, they're what he's arguing against. So he had mastered everything, all the philosophies, he had already mastered them. And his conviction was, they're all bogus. This is the truth. The Shastra is coming. Ultimately, it's coming from Srimad Bhagavatam. So we accept that. That's why we accept. Prabhupada would sometimes say, why do we accept Krishna? Because the Shastra says, Krishna himself says in Bhagavad Gita that he is God. That's why we accept them as God. The Acharyas, the Parampara, going back so far, has accepted them. In other Shastras, in the Bhagavatam, it's there in the Krishna Sandarbha, Jiva Goswami, there's one section of the Krishna Sandarbha where he shows how all the speakers of the Bhagavatam are talking about Krishna. And they mention Krishna too. There are many places where you would think, well, this person doesn't seem like a Krishna Bhakta, just like Prahlad Maharaj. Why is he saying, Matir na Krishne parata sutova? Why is he talking about Krishna? This comes up repeatedly. Krishna's name comes up throughout the Bhagavatam, because ultimately it's about Krishna. And of course, we have 90 chapters out of 325 that are specifically about Krishna. In other places too, Krishna comes on the scene. The seventh chapter of the first canto, and much of the first canto we have about Krishna, going back to Hastinapur, or leaving Hastinapur, or going to Dwarka, and so on. So there's so much there about Krishna. And that's written by Vyasadeva in his full maturity. So that's our faith. We accept because who am I? Why should I doubt Shukadeva Goswami? That was Prabhupada's answer to, you know, when people asked about the fifth canto. Prabhupada would say, Shukadeva Goswami is saying it, I accept it. It's end of the argument. I accept it on the authority of Shukadeva Goswami, just as he said in this purport today too. So these great souls, unfortunately people don't know anything about them. We've been introduced to them by Prabhupada. I often think about this. Of course, I didn't know Krishna before I came to Krishna consciousness, didn't know anything about him. I don't know if I'd even heard about him, except maybe hearing a George Harrison song or something. I didn't know anything about him. I even joke, I say, I didn't know anything about yoga, yogi. I didn't know any yogis. The only yogis I knew were Yogi Berra, Yogi Berra, and my friend had a dog named Yogi. That, a baseball player, a cartoon character, and a dog. That was my experience of yoga before I came to Krishna consciousness. But this whole world, when Prabhupada introduced us, because he's from that world, he opened up the door, he opened up the curtain. So imagine, I was just reading the other day, in Gopi Pranadana's introduction to Tattvasandarbha, where he talks about how, I forget how many it is, but there's thousands of characters in the Srimad Bhagavatam. There are at least 30 avatars that are discussed in the Bhagavatam, and thousands of other personalities. So that whole world opened up to us. Not only didn't I know Krishna, I didn't know Narada Muni. My life would have been a waste. I didn't know Narada Muni. Of course, I didn't know Bhaktisiddhanta, Bhaktivinoda. I didn't know the Parampara. Of course, I can't go on and list them all because there are thousands and thousands of them that we're introduced to. And so many of them are great authorities. We know we have the 12 Mahajans, so they're considered as authorities. But there are other lists in the Bhagavatam. Sometimes I think, I wonder why we choose this list and not this other list. Because there are other lists, and some of them have more names on it, 15, 20 names, who are considered to be great spiritual authorities. So we have access to all of that, and they corroborate each other's teachings. And that, of course, that comes out in the Bhagavatam. There's a central theme, and we keep returning to that. And of course, we're hearing this yogi is on his way to Brahmaloka, so Brahmaloka is the supreme authority. There's a verse that will come up later in the second canto, where it says that Lord Brahma studied the Vedas three times, from beginning to end. And his conclusion was devotional service to Krishna is the end. That's the final word of the Vedic literature. That's what it's all about. That's the Nigama Kalpa Taroa Galitam Palam. So the Vedas are like a tree. People looking from outside, they don't see any coherence in the Vedas. They just think, well, this sage said that, and this sage said that, and happened at different times. They don't see a unified picture. But we're given a unified picture by Vyasadeva in the Srimad Bhagavatam. And the fruit produced by that unified tree of the Vedas is the Srimad Bhagavatam. And we get to taste it by the mercy of the great Acharyas. All right, I'm going a little long here. I'll stop. Anybody have anything to add or correct or whatever? Yes.
Hare Krishna. So when Vyasadeva is a Shakta Vaishava avatar, the incarnation of the Lord for a specific function, maybe writing the Vedas and introducing it. So Krishna appears in different ways, even at the same time. He appeared as Krishna, appeared as Vyasadeva, and that knowledge that Vyasadeva received comes from Narada Muni. And then to write all these specific Vedic literature and all the details of the Vedas. So this, the Shakti Vesha avatar of the Lord. So the Lord could be, if he appears as he is or as a Shakti Vesha, the same thing, right?
Yeah, either way, it's Krishna's. The Shakti Vesha, well, he can be empowered for different ways, but it's at least a Shakti, just like Lord Buddha's Shakti Vesha too, but we don't follow his teachings. In some sense, you can take that anybody who's specifically empowered by Krishna to do anything is Shaktiyavesh. But we tend to think of Shaktiyavesh in the category of one who's presenting Krishna consciousness and presenting the Siddhanta in that way. That's you know, more Krishna visibly coming for our benefit. And of course, even Buddha, even though he's teaching bogus philosophy, there's some purpose to what he's doing. So ultimately, of course, it's part of Krishna's plan.
You mentioned in the Dasavatara Buddha as incarnation, right?
What's that?
The Buddha is mentioned in the Dasavatara as the incarnation of the Lord.
Yeah, as far as I know, he's Shakti Avesha Avatara. Now, one thing is, sometimes he may be something, maybe not, because that also happens. In fact, the same thing with Vyasadeva. There's at least one place, I think it's in the Tapasandarbha. Yeah, Jiva Goswami quotes, I think it's the Vishnu Shandarbha that he quotes, a Vishnu Purana, that in this particular age that we're in, the Vyasadeva is actually Bhagavan. He's not actually just Shakti Avesh, he's actually Vishnu Tattva. Because Vyasadeva comes every Dwapara Yuga, and he does something with, he edits, coordinates the Vedas. So, in fact, Parashara Muni was or will be, I forget, Vyasadeva in one of the cycles of the four ages. So these things change all the time. So Kalki, and a lot of times our scriptures, they tend to focus in a certain place, like the time that we're in some, only a few hundred thousand years or something. But if you start looking about Day of Brahma, and you have, in this Day of Brahma, there are three or four incarnations of Vamanadeva and Varaha. There's more than one Varaha. So these things change a lot. And that's why we get different descriptions, just like these different sages. I get confused. I really did some research on this, trying to make sense of it, and I had a hard time of it. Then there are nine sages, but there are also seven sages, or seven rishis. There are nine sages who seem to be the Prajapatis, because these Prajapatis, they marry the daughters of Kardama Muni. And then the tenth of those is Narada Muni. So when they all came to get married, Narada Muni was with them, and they all stayed and got married. And then Narada Muni left with Lord Brahma because he's a Naishika Brahmachari. The rest of them got married. So anyway, these lists, the other thing is, in every day of Brahma, we hear about this in the eighth canto, a lot of these things change. Indra changes, with the change of Manus, these positions change. So Indra changes with every Manu. And not only Indra, but the seven sages change either. Also, we read this. So we tend to think, well, these are the seven, and you come up with a list. But that list changes with every Manu. So it's not always the same. And the Indra changes. Just like Bali Maharaj, he's going to be Indra in the next time around, the next four ages. So these things, there's a lot going on. Even in one day of Brahma, there's a... Because Brahma is way up there. What they, this Maharloka, I was going to talk about the other higher than that, but they become more and more subtle. Maharloka, then Janaloka, then Tapaloka. And the enjoyment is more and more intense. Even though they're not enjoying like the heavenly planets, but the happiness of their experience, it's said to be millions of times greater. A lot of times I think of this, because you tend to think, well, if you're happy, you're happy. You can't. How can you be more full of happiness? You get, but somehow it increases and increases, even subtly in the material world. Now, ananam buddhi vardhanam, we think spiritually, of course, but even materially, on these higher planets, they're getting more and more happiness. And that's one thing that drives Gopakumar on, because he's seeing, wow, this person is really, really up there. I need to go to his place and see what's going on there. So, and they become more and more subtle. I think it was my last class, I talked about how going through the seven coverings of the universe, the same idea is there. Because before you start with Earth, where Varaha Devi is being worshipped by Bhumi Devi, and you go to each layer. So yogis also do that, to leave this universe. And each one is more subtle, and the enjoyment, the level of bliss, you can say, that they're experiencing, it's not spiritual exactly, but it's more and more intense. Well, there's so much variety. The book, it says, Tava Jagat Vichitra. There's so much variety going on, and it's higher and higher and higher and deeper and deeper and deeper, even materially speaking. Pushkar Prabhu.
I was going to say, you said about Indra, but I think I just noticed in the Beard Bhagavatamrita, Indra is telling Gopakumar, or telling Narada Muni, is it, that I'm nothing. Actually, 16 Indras in the day of Brahma, he said. I was going to say how when we work on these maps to try to update the fifth canto back in 77, showing Prabhupada every maybe five, six times we went in to see, it was a committee with Yasodhananda, Tamal, TKG, and this Prem Swami. So Prem Swami was the Sanskrit guy, right? So one day we talked about Shishumar, and he said Shishumar, and probably agreed with this, he said Shishumar means to kill a child. And so it should be a scorpion, not a dolphin, you know, or a porpoise, whatever, a dolphin. And probably agreed, yes. But it never got trickled down to where it was changed everywhere. I don't
know. Yeah, it's still there. It says, in the word for word, actually, it says dolphin.
Yeah, I know. Other people say dolphin all over the internet. Any Vedic site will say that. But he was pretty convinced that Shishumar means...
Shishu means child and Mar means...
Kill, a scorpion.
Scorpion?
Scorpion. He said it was scorpions that kills children. Shishumar.
Oh, kill, yeah, yeah. Mara, 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 rama, rama, rama.
What's that?
Hare Krishna, Prabhu. Oh, when I was driving over, you were talking about the movement of the heavens, a little bit every night and then more. And that reminded me of actually a comment I was thinking of yesterday from home, when that very animated discussion was going on about devotees, why don't devotees exhibit more mystic powers. And it reminded me, early on, the few devotees went with Srila Prabhupada to Dr. Mishra's country ashram, and someone had a dream, I can't remember now whether it was Hayagriva, but they, in the dream, they saw this beautiful, beautiful youth. And in the dream, they thought, Swamiji, is that you? And he said, yes. And he said, why don't you come like this? And he said, people would follow me for my beauty and not for my teachings.
Mm-hmm.
I just wanted to share that, even though it's yesterday.
We still follow him for his beauty, huh? Devotees were so impressed by Prabhupada's grace in doing things. Prabhu, you want to say something? Prabhu? Okay.
Thank you, Prabhu, for a very nice class. I have so many questions on fifth canto,
oh,
and, here's my summary on fifth canto of, you know, once I read it, I thought, you know, the conclusion I got, and correct me if I'm wrong because I don't want to live the rest of my life with this conclusion, is the planet of movie called Planet of Apes, right? So in that movie, I don't know if you have seen that movie Planet of Apes.
Kier?
Yeah.
The moon is, you said? I'm not hearing very well.
A movie called Planet of Apes.
Okay.
Yeah,
a movie
called
The Planet of the Apes.
Apes,
okay.
Yeah. In that movie...
I think that's the Earth planet. That's
yeah.
Pretty much these days.
Yeah. In that movie, they didn't want apes to go the other side because they knew that those humans have destroyed their planet. And they didn't want to tell them the truth. So they said, oh, just live in this area and not... And that's how I think, you know, Bhagavatam is giving some explanation of all those stars, moons, nakshatras, everything, because they didn't want us to know the exact truth, because we are monkeys, and if we know the truth, we will destroy ourselves. And that's what is happening, you know, with the science. We are knowing too much, and we are destroying ourselves. And
well, first, it's not they, it's he, Shukadev Goswami.
Yeah.
And it's not that he doesn't want us to know the truth. Now, I think I should finish the sentence in the closet, isn't it, Prabhupada? But we can't understand, that's the point. We can't understand. It's like trying to explain, you know, quantum physics to a kindergartner. What are you going to tell the kid? So we can't, we just can't understand it. It's these subtle worlds, how could, they don't, they, things will seem contradictory to us, and they just don't come together. You know, have you ever tried to learn something where you just don't get it? I have had that experience. I one time was interested, I wanted to learn about, what is this? It was either quantum or relativity, I forget. And I got one of these books, you know, for idiots, those books or dummies, whatever, four dummies books. And I still couldn't understand it. So I was, even the four dummies book was too much for me to understand. So sometimes we can't grasp things. So just, you know, we're hearing about these subtle worlds. what goes on there, what to speak of the spiritual world. When Gopa Kumara goes to Vaikuntha, he says, I'm going to try to say something, but I can't really put into words what's going on here. At every moment, there's an unlimited number of indescribable things going on here. So in these worlds too, you look and you think, now how are they worshiping? Even things that take place here, I think about, like Matsyavatara. He's, what is it, 800 million miles long or something like that? 8 million miles. I think, well, how do you talk to somebody who's 8 million miles long? Where's his ear? You know, it's like he's everywhere. He's completely, how can you even see something that's 8 million miles long? So, you know, the Bhagavatam is full of that kind of thing. You know, from our point of view, you think, well, what? How can this be? So that's the way I see it, is that, and Prabhupada said, I was just reading recently, where Prabhupada said, we're not too concerned about all these details of the fifth canto. Now, maybe some scientists, for preaching purposes, they may want to be able to explain these things. But his point of view is, we just accept it, and, you know, we read other things, other things in the Bhagavatam. When I hear about Lord Chaitanya and his associates relishing the Bhagavatam, I usually don't think they're reading the fifth canto. Although in the Chaitanya Bhagavat, it says that Lord Chaitanya repeatedly heard the story of Dhruva Maharaj, which is interesting, because, you know, he's not only hearing Gopi Leela, Krishna Rasa Leela, he's also completely inspired hearing about Dhruva Maharaj repeatedly. So that's interesting.
My question is, I haven't asked my question yet. So, because my question is, whatever the numbers is giving in the fifth canto, it doesn't make sense with the science we know today. You know, it says, you know, one sun, you know, brightens the whole universe, but we know there's millions, billions of suns. We know there are nakshatras, and we know how distance, even the Dhruv, the North Pole, right? We know how far is that, and whatever the number is given in the fifth canto, that
it's getting
not
late. Can you get to your question, please?
Yeah, my question is, it is not aligned with the
it
numbers.
Doesn't align with modern science.
Yes, exactly.
We say, who cares? We're not interested in what they say. Who cares? How do we know that they're right? They don't know that they're right. The other thing is, now if you, maybe you should read Sataputta's books, and he has a website, and Stita D is his promoter over here. And the other thing is, Sataputta has written articles, and he has explained that just like the Bhumandala, that it corresponds to the solar system, not to the whole universe. So they may not be talking about, even though the word universe is being used, may not be talking about the same unit, just like the word species we use. So the 8,400,000 species have nothing to do with the species that modern science talks about. One easy way to nail that down is according to the Vedas, there are 400,000 human species. Well, obviously, modern science doesn't agree with that. They say there's one human species, Homo sapiens sapiens, I think it's called. So there, and devotees like that because I wrote about this in BTG editorial one time. They like the idea that, because they come up right now, they're at a number of 8 million something. And people say, oh, look at that. It's all just like the Vedas. But their species, actually the word, there's not even a word there in the verse. It's quoted, Jalaja Navalakshani. It just means there are 900,000 of these and so many of these and so many of these. So my point is that even if the words are used, they're not always used the same way. So we may say universe, we may not be describing the universe, and we're talking about subtle things also. What do they know of subtlety? They don't. The hardcore scientists, all they know is atoms. They don't accept anything that's paranormal. They just reject it. You can't go near it because then you're considered, you know, you're left out, you've left the school, you're kicked out of science if you dare to talk about anything that approaches the paranormal. No, 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 you can't do that. So they have blinders on. They have blinders on. They can't see things. They don't dare to investigate. I mean, of course, some do, but most of them, they don't. And of course, a lot of scientists, they also don't, they're not interested in philosophy. They're interested in their little thing that they're doing. They don't even think about big pictures in science. One thing about Sataputta was he was very he knew a lot about, he was a polymath, he knew a lot about a lot of things, the different aspects of science. And he looked at these things closely and he came up with brilliant ways of looking at things and explaining them. So if this is something that really, you know, disturbs you, maybe there's something wrong with the Bhagavatam, it's good. That was what was, you know, a wonderful thing about Sariputta Prabhu, because he was so brilliant, but, you know, his foundation was, I accept Prabhupada, I accept the Bhagavatam. So let me see how I can, you know, what they're saying, does it fit, does it not? This is the truth. Compare everything else to the truth. Don't try to see if the Bhagavatam is true. No, the Bhagavatam is Svata Pramana. It's self-evident truth. That's the word that Lord Chaitanya uses in Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's true by its very nature. It's like people ask, you know, why is Krishna blue? Well, he is. There's no why to it. He just is. These are just eternal truths. So these things in the Vedas. And the other thing is, one thing about the Bhagavatam is that in many ways there are different summaries of things. So more details are available in other places, in other planets, on Brahmaloka. The Puranas are much, you know, billions and billions of verses, so you can go there and you can study more in depth if you want to get a closer in look. But the real point of the Bhagavatam is devotional service to Krishna. So Shukadeva gave us what we needed to come to that conclusion. Okay, I don't know, do we keep going here? Or? Dr. D.
Yeah, we're doing a lot of cosmology workshops on the fifth canto and modern cosmology with the BI. And, I mean, you know, there's areas of comparison, like with Sariputta found some of the mathematics for the Bhumandala seem to conform to some of the mathematics involved in the solar system, you know, how we, you know, viewing the motion. So there could be areas of overlap. But, you know, that's interesting. You know, that's interesting. And what does it mean? Can say fully. And as far as, you know, it corresponding to modern science, or first place we say we don't understand the fifth canto, I guarantee you we don't understand modern science either, you know. So, and it's a tentative exercise. I mean, what's established consensus in astrophysics this decade is not the same as 50 years ago or 100 years ago. Actually, you know, around the turn of the last century, their concept of the cosmos is so radically different from contemporary concepts in astrophysics of the cosmos. I've heard it described, it's more dramatic of a shift. And this is all within modern science concepts than between, you know, the ancient Greek astronomy and Copernicus. You know, so things, it's a tentative perspective and there could be areas of overlap and that's interesting. But, you know, as far as what passes for knowledge and science this decade, they're going to learn different things. It's endless. So it's interesting to do, but is it essential? I think that was basically Nagaraja's point.
Okay. I think, you know, let's stop here. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.